You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom. Dexcom.com/compatibility.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Wants the NFL to change the name of every holiday.
Welcome to another edition of Around the NFL. My name is Dan Hansis, and I have with me heroes virtually across the Southland and beyond. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. Happy day after Thanksgiving, presented by the National Football League in honor of John Madden. I don't think I have all the wording right, but probably close enough.
Happy Thanksgiving, day after, presented by John Madden. Did you boys enjoy the day?
Very yeah, nice. had a great day. I noticed that the Black Friday Jets Dolphins ad that they ran came very close in tone and sort of authority to Dan's suggestion that at some point we'll just be rolling games out on Easter Sunday. They kind of like made it clear, we now own this day.
Right. They got it. They got Thanksgiving. They've always had Thanksgiving, and now they have Friday, and that's coming up in a couple hours. We're going to be watching that game, and we'll have the recap of that on the Sunday show. But for today, and it was a very nice Thanksgiving. We host it every year at our house, and it's a Friendsgiving, but you know the friends are very close, so it's like family. So it's a great holiday, and the one thing the NFL really has nailed about it is, you know, you can't imagine Thanksgiving without football, and especially without that first game in Detroit with the Lions. A game, boys, that we're going to get to first. We're going to go in order that none of us kind of expected it playing out this way, and it kind of changed for me a lot of my thoughts about the NFC. Underneath, you know, the big boys, which I don't count the Lions among at this point. Let's hit it.
23-14 Packers, 3:45 to go in the third. Watson to the left, snap to Love, loft the left side of the end zone.
Don't get it.
Over the shoulder catch, touchdown, Christian Watson. Yes, yes, they make the Lions pay. 16-yard touchdown reception. It's 29-14.
Wayne Larrivee with the call for WRNW. And, you know, we thought we were going to hear from Wayne, from Dan Miller of the Lions, because everything seems set up for the Detroit Lions in this great revitalization period to announce themselves as a dominant force and kick butt on Thanksgiving. But it went the other way. The Packers win 29-22, and it really wasn't that close. The tone was set on a Jordan Love 53-yard pass to Christian Watson on the game's first play. Greg, we talked about it on the Wednesday preview show. They lead the league and explosives like that. And they just kept taking it to the Lions, Greg. Lions team that, on top of being flat-footed to start the game, just killing themselves with the mistakes throughout the afternoon, and they could not put it together.
They couldn't. I mean, on some level, it starts with Jared Goff, you know, turnovers for the second straight week, but I really think it starts back in week 7. And that's when we saw the Lions play the Ravens. And that was a game they were so comprehensively destroyed on every level. did make you think, well, you can throw that out like a little bit, but let's see how that goes. Since then, they've played four pretty lackluster teams, five if you want to count the Packers, although they're certainly playing better now. And they're the worst defense or the second worst defense in the league, depending on what metric you want to use. They all agree. And that's a five-week sample size. And that's against some pretty good quarterbacks, you know, like Justin Herbert and Lamar's in there. But it's also against the Raiders and Jordan Love, who is playing better and better every week, but is not a top 10 quarterback right now. And all these guys are having career days against them. And I'm with you, Dan. I think they can improve, but right now it's hard to see them in the mix with the truly great NFC teams.
I don't know. I mean, if we talk about them as a playoff possibility, I think they're going to test for that number seven spot. I think yesterday, I mean, I'm with you, Dan.
The Lions you think are going to test for that? I'm talking about Lions here.
I'm saying Green Bay, absolutely.
No, yeah, like, I'm talking about opinion. The Lions at 8-3. I'm not putting with the
Lions. You're a little high on that tryptophan?
No, I think the Lions, like, to me, like, the...
That's a good one. That's good.
To watch how their strength was their offensive line. And I thought that their offensive line was one of the reasons that Jared Goff had been, you know, pristine going back to last season in many ways. And everything's changed over the last couple of weeks. Like, three lost fumbles yesterday, six turnovers over the last 2 weeks. They're lucky they got out of that Bears game with a win. And, it, you know, in this division that seemed to be essentially just kind of handed up to them, I'm looking at, to my point before, I'm looking at Green Bay and thinking, like, wait a minute, they're changing before our eyes. Their quarterback is, their passing game is. And I look at that game and, like, I don't really remember Matt LaFleur having a better performance as a coach. I think no one expected that to happen the way it did. He came in with a surprising game plan. They stomped Detroit at home, doing what they do well now. And it's a different Packers team than before because of their quarterback, because of their young wide receivers. And I'm not really sure what the ceiling is for the Packers at this point. It's like they're still kind of growing before our eyes, but it's like they absolutely, like, I thought a week ago, oh, the Vikings will take that number seven spot. I don't know anything right now. Green Bay, like, is kind of unpredictable.
Well, listen, there's room for the Packers and the Vikings right, and the Lions in the playoffs, and the Vikings will get their game on Monday night to continue to build for them. But yeah, I don't think if Detroit had a more difficult schedule, if they had Seattle's schedule, for instance, and we're going to get to the Seahawks a little bit later, I'd be very worried about a tailspin for this team, because you've seen the Goff and the offense really kind of stumble. And this could be a slump, or it could be the sign of an ugly comeback to earth. It's probably closer to a slump. But the schedule is so soft that I think Detroit is going to be okay and get to that, you know, 11 wins. Probably 11. They feel to me like 11-6. That's going to be enough probably to win the division. The Packers are now a team of fascination for me because of Love mostly. I mean, and you're right about LaFleur, because, you know, he was taking on a lot of criticism early in the season. And I think there was some, like, you know, kind of sideways glances, like he was being exposed now without Aaron Rodgers. But instead, you look at this team now as they have, as we head toward the final stretch after Thanksgiving, and he's got Jordan Love playing at a high level the last few weeks. He was an excellent quarterback, and that's a huge a benefit or a credit to an offensive-minded coach like LaFleur. So he has the offense cooking. The big plays continue to be a part of things. Christian Watson is coming out of his shell. I think he's going to have a big close to the season now. And, yeah, I like the Packers as a team that can make the playoffs, and I would not have predicted that a couple of weeks ago. Did we fork them?
I don't think we did, no.
Okay, good.
I have no recollection whatsoever of our fork committee. They do have the Chiefs, you know, next week, but after that, all the games are winnable. And so I'm with you. But even if they don't make the playoffs, whatever happens, this season is somewhat about Jordan Love. The GM Gutekunst, I think he said that, I don't remember if that was at the bye week or if it was after the bye week, of like, you know, this is an important stretch here for Jordan Love. And I think back to that Rams game, and I do think that's when it all changed. I know that the box score wasn't crazy in that game. They won 20-3, but his decision-making was really good. And then he played well again the next week against the Steelers. And I remember saying at the time of the show, I thought those were his best two games of the season in a row. I know he had some nice touchdown interception ratio early in the season. Felt a little fluky, felt a little fake to me, to be honest. Like, he had some nice throws, but it wasn't him doing it. And these last 4 weeks, and you saw it yesterday, was some next level quarterback stuff. He's a very weird quarterback, But he passes the test where if he's protected, he can obviously make some big plays. They cooked up the Lions in play action. They attack their weaknesses deep down the field, and they're not good deep down the field. But the thing I like about him is you see that sidearm angle to Heath early in the game. You saw the accuracy on the touchdown to Reed. But if you kind of go through his snaps on a snap-to-snap basis, he seems like a quarterback. Like, he seems like he's making decisions. He's recognizing blitzes. He's getting the second and third reads. I think he makes some crazy throws, and he's not the most accurate quarterback in the world, so there's a little ups and downs. But, like, the processing, the mentality of it all is like, okay, this is a quarterback, and if he keeps building off this, if he plays like this at all for the rest of the season, it's like, okay, we've got year two of Jordan Love in this very affordable contract, and we at least know we're going into year two with him still as our quarterback.
I'd also, you know, on Thursday we noted like the laundry list of injuries that the Packers had coming into this game. And so a lot of that play action happened without Aaron Jones in the lineup. And like earlier on in the year, when Aaron Jones was lost for a long stretch of time, like it really handicapped and capsized the offense. And like yesterday, that just was not the case. Like AJ Dillon did just enough for him, but the aggressive nature of what LaFleur has loved doing, I think, is very exciting for Packers fans, because I don't know, about a month ago, I was like, I don't know about this Jordan Love thing. It's like, we'll see. Like, he seems very middle of the road, and there has been like tangible, visible growth, and their young wide receivers are growing along with him. The same way I felt about like the Steelers coming into the year with all these like young weapons, and I don't think they're weapons at all half across the board in Pittsburgh, is how I feel about Green Bay now. So it's like, I thought yesterday was one of these games that like changed the way a lot of people feel about two different teams.
On the other side, at the quarterback position, we've touched on it briefly here, but I thought Goff was terrible, and he was coming off a multiple turnover game the week before, but this time the ball security was woeful. It reminded me of the late period with the Rams. He was missing throws as well. There were miscommunications with his wide receivers. They couldn't get on the same page. He was an issue for them in this game. And if Goff is not going to be his pristine self he's been for the majority of his career with Detroit, then the defense is going to be what it is right now. That is the recipe for a lot of losses. Here's Dan Campbell on his team's sudden swoon.
Again, the easy thing is to get in panic mode, and I know, you know, what it looks like, and it wasn't good enough out there, but I'm not panicked. We got the right guys here. We know how to play. We got to clean some things up, and we'll have six to go when we get back. And the fight's on, man. I mean, they think this is going to be some cruise control. We're going to have to fight and scratch and fight and claw for everything, man. We have to. That's the type of team we are. That's where we're at.
All right. Any other thoughts on this game, boys?
I thought we saw a little bit from Jameson Williams, but I want to just note that one of our listeners chimed in with something I had mentioned on the Thursday show about, I thought, you know, various matronly aunts around the country would take a look at Sam LaPorta, who had a nice start to the game, then the thing went sideways. But I don't know if we have this tweet, Eric.
Let's hear it out loud. This
okay,
is an
so
medium.
Another prophecy fulfilled. Welcome, my Mark. Aunt, while not matronly, definitely took notice of Sam LaPorta during the Lions game. She's also not a football fan. They showed him and Goff in quick succession, so I verified, and she even parroted back LaPorta's name.
That is a weird tweet.
It is a weird tweet, but I appreciate
it. Quiet storm.
Like, everything about it is strange.
What, are you questioning whether this is like real or
no, it's,
like
no,
it's a
it's
Mark
real.
Bot?
Just,
it's a Mark Shadow
or a
account.
Mark Burner. Mark, did you write that?
I don't even use like X myself, much less have
Come
a
on,
burner.
Kaiser Soze, tell us the truth.
No,
I just saw it this morning and it caught my eye that, like, you know, I think it's just matching it up on like the aunt archetype individual with Sam LaPorta's like physical being.
He's a young, beefy young guy. A young Gronk.
Wait,
a better
was your prediction
Gronk,
that he was hot and the aunt would take notice? I thought it was aunts. That he would have a massive game.
No, it was more that, like, you know, the aunt who's not football, like, enthused would be in the room and just notice him, the physical specimen.
You mentioned the O-line. Like, there's a weird sort of almost analytics off about how good this O-line actually is, because, like, everyone thinks it's one of the best lines in the league. It certainly, like, PFF, for instance, grades it as one of the elite lines in the league. Pass rush win rate, run block win rate, not so great. Certainly the eyeball test the last couple of weeks, not so great. And Jared Goff, more than any quarterback in the NFL, is impacted by pressure and just turns into a totally different dude. So it's like, they've had a couple injuries, and Vitae's not coming back, I don't believe. And it's interesting because I think the whole idea with Campbell was we're going to be great on the lines. And their D-line with Hutchinson and McNeil, even though those two players are both good, they're bad. And so now, like, they just don't get enough pressure. And their cornerbacks, they're bad. That's a bad combo. Not enough pressure and bad cornerback. So on one side, you got some issues. On the other side, if the O-line starts creaking, then you're right, Dan. But I'm not panicking. In both of these games, it's like, even in a bad game, they still get like 464 yards. They're going to move the ball. Like,
lipstick on the pig there late too, Greg.
Absolutely, but they were moving the ball when they're not turning it over seven times in the last 2 weeks or whatever. All I'm saying is like they're going to be getting first downs. They are a nasty running team. I'm not too worried about them there, but the defense is like legit bad. And if they're the home team, and we're a ways away from the playoffs, but they are the team, the five or the six seed might want to be playing here in the playoffs because you could put up a 40 burger.
If I'm a Detroit fan, I'm not letting it be known. I'm a little bit nervous right now. That's all.
I'd agree.
A little bit. Analytics off, Greg, you said. That sounds like the worst time ever. by the way, I did last night watched the Barry Sanders doc on Amazon and reminded you of his greatness and also the struggles of being a Lions fan, especially from the perspective of Eminem, Jeff Bridges, and Tim Tooltime Allen. I don't know why that documentary is always at the back. We need to get these celebrity sports fans in. And it's like Tim Allen was in this documentary for like maybe two lines.
I watched the first hour maybe so far. I was waiting for Walker to get back on whenever night that was. He went to the Lakers game with a friend. And I did not see Tim Allen. I haven't gotten quite to the end. But I thought when Jeff Bridges said he identified with Barry.
That was incredible.
I loved it. That Barry was just a man, the life, the juice. It's all from when the whistle blows to when the whistle stops. And anything other than that, he doesn't need. Just like Jeff Bridges, there's a certain type of actor. When they call cut to when they call cut, bye-bye. that's when it matters. And other than that, it's nothing. So Bridges,
yeah, the parallel is
Sanders,
striking.
It is kind of crazy to watch Barry Sanders now, and those clips don't age at all. And you're like, oh, yeah, that would still be by far the best running back in the league. It's crazy.
And my Barry Sanders story, which I think I've shared on the show, but and I was hoping it was going to make it into the doc, but nobody contacted me, is when our old boss, Justin Hathaway, Mark, worked us 80 hours for that first Super Bowl in Indianapolis, Giants Pats 2.
Yeah.
And he had me cover the flag football, celebrity flag football game. And Barry Sanders was on the game. It was on one of the teams and was not involved with the offense. They were running the offense through Maria Menounos. And Barry Sanders is there. Nobody's even talking to him. And I'm like, that's like maybe the greatest running back who ever lived.
That's an odd, that's not approach to offense. It feels like a Chip Kelly invention.
All right. Good stuff. And the Packers, by the way, thank you to Eric Roberts. 17 players were on the injured list in that game as well. They had no business going there and bullying the Lions in that spot. So interesting. All right. Let's move to the middle game. And by the way, we did fork the Panthers, Pats, Broncos, Bears, Cardinals. And then I belatedly, and my apologies, I forked the Giants. So those are the four teams. Maybe we'll revisit it in the upcoming week.
Broncos, you know, making us sweat a little bit.
All right, let's head to Big D, where the Cowboys were not in the mood for any type of competitive contest.
Second and 10 at the Dallas 43. Howell's back, throws it.
Oh, look out.
Picked up! It's Bland!
Again!
He's got one.
No way!
The 20. He cuts left. He breaks the tackle at the 10.
Stop it.
He did it again. The whole defense is going to put Bland in the kettle. That is unbelievable. That's the most pick sixes in one season in NFL history. 5 touchdowns. Where did you come from?
Great call. And what you did, if you watch on YouTube, you could see it, or if you watched live yesterday, Dan Quinn up in the booth, the DC, the Cowboys, going absolutely ape shit, celebrating Daron Bland setting the NFL record for pick sixes in the season. I mean, his fifth. The fifth of the season. Kyle Pitts has 4 career touchdowns in his whole like NFL career. Deron Bland is a cornerback. He's got 5 pick sixes this year. Unbelievable. And that was just the little like stamp at the end of the game, because the Cowboys offense absolutely obliterated the Commanders, got their DC fired. We're going to talk about it. 45-10 from Jero World. This was, Mark, a total celebration of the Cowboys, the brand, and their standing as one of the very elite teams in the NFL.
It was. And, you know, I've been critical of the Cowboy experience over the years, but not in this version of what we saw, because they have been doing this at home all year long. They are 5-0 at home and have outscored opponents 205 points to 60 in those 5 wins. That's insane. But it is not nearly as insane as what Deron Bland has done. It's like CeeDee Lamb has 6 touchdowns, and he's a superstar. The degree of difficulty of what Deron Bland has done is wild to me. That was not, these aren't like, you know, picked off at the goal line like what we saw in the Seahawks Niners game. It's like, that's a 63-yard return, and it's done it over and over. And it's like, I don't, there are certain football records that we can argue matter or don't matter. This matters because he's helping the team win. He's pouring on points at the end of the game. It's the kind of thing for me that it's like, I don't know if we'll ever see this again. This could be the kind of thing where you could go 50 years, or for us, we're not going to be here for maybe 50 more years. You never know. Like it could be a long time before anyone touches this, because it's such a confluence of insane things happening. It's not just being in the right place at the right time, but you also have to be the athlete to do what he's done. Like on that return, how easy would it have been a 13-yard return? You get clipped, you're down at the ground. It's just kind of magical. And I know that like it completely electrified that stadium, their owner, the whole thing.
Well, are you saying I'm not going to live to 94? That's my...
I did not guarantee that, Greg.
Well, the data suggests not,
I'm
Greg.
So much older than you, Greg, that, you know, according to the two of you, that I was more suggesting perhaps I won't see that record broken.
Well, you'll
perhaps
be triple digits. If you make it, you'll be triple digits, and that is pretty wild.
That would be wild. That's a long time from now.
This Cowboys team does feel different. Now, could they lose in the second round of the playoffs? Of course they could, because like I don't think they're a step apart from these other teams. But they do have everything they need right now. And the most important thing is just Dak Dots down the field. He's so comfortable. And Romo, I know he gets overexcited, but I don't think he says things like this might be the best offensive line in the league right now, especially in terms of pass protection, willy-nilly. And they are just playing outstanding up front. Now, everyone looks outstanding up front against this Commanders pass rush. It doesn't exist. But he's throwing the ball deep down the field. That's 18 vertical throws for a touchdown this year, according to Next Gen Stats, way more than any other player. And 14 of those are in like the last 6 weeks. So this is a bombs away offense. And I thought these last couple weeks, it's almost like they're working on things that they'll need in bigger games. They got Gallup and Cooks involved last week. And then this week, I thought Pollard ran really well. I know it was only 13 carries, but from quarter one, quarter two, when it mattered, they were consistently running the ball. And that was excellent. It was actually not a game they were dominating in total yardage through three quarters or anything, but they were getting everything they wanted to done. I think 15 of their first 26 plays were first downs. I mean, that's just stupid.
This was, in many ways, the ultimate Cowboys game, at least in terms of the regular season. The game on Thanksgiving with the Salvation Army Red Kettle out for the first time. You have a blowout of a hated rival. You have Deron Bland making history. You have Dak once again saying, I am a very real MVP candidate. You had a certain celebrity that I'll get to in a moment at halftime. Jerry Jones was over the moon with this one.
This is a surreal day. I wouldn't even dare, as much as I imagine or as big as I might dream or think, I couldn't have drawn a day like today up. I couldn't have imagined it. It really covered a lot of ground. And
Don't you get the feeling that the atmosphere, and maybe Jane Slater would be the best person to ask this question to, but when things are going well for the Cowboys, it just seems everyone, when you see those like group interviews and stuff around Jerry, like everything is good. Everybody's in a good mood. The Cowboys are kicking butt and spirits are high. And if Jerry's spirits are high, you can tell that whole vibe around that team is glowing. And that's certainly where it is right now.
I'm totally with you. I think he's really well liked. I'll never forget actually being in Dallas a number of like Thanksgivings ago. That's like 2000, Drew Bledsoe era, and went with my uncle and cousins to the Cowboys game, and I watched Jerry Jones before kickoff individually shake hands with, I would say, roughly 400 people. Like, he took that time. So it's like, it is his baby. It's his thing. We've always known that. And I've always felt like there's always like an air of like hyperbole to anything he says about the team. But in this case, this season and yesterday, I did not feel that. I think it was like this is a different Cowboys team to me than one that we've experienced together on this show.
He was quoted as part of that scrum as saying, "I'll put some Super Bowls in there. I don't know if I've ever had a better day with the Cowboys than today." And that's all about Thanksgiving. Like, I believe that he believes that in the moment. He's saying that in the moment. Thanksgiving is the ultimate Cowboys holiday celebration. Wes and I love this book, Billy Fountain's Long Halftime Walk, which is a great book sort of about the NFL and military service and football. And it's set on Thanksgiving at these games. And there's something so American for good and bad, like, about all this. And the Cowboys putting a bang thing on the Commanders is like,
that's, I'm sorry, what's bad about it out of curiosity?
Well, read the book. I would say, like, some of the ways.
I was talking about just yesterday. Okay, the book.
Oh, no,
I'm sure
nothing bad yesterday.
Okay,
just the over the top sort of the way they used the. It was written from the perspective military guy. Yeah.
Because, and Greg is very well known for putting myself in line on this, the celebration of people being fired from their jobs, because the Cowboys decimated the Washington defense to the point that the new owner of the team, Josh Harris, fired defensive coordinator Jack Del Rio after the game. They also parted ways with defensive backs coach Brent Wieselmeyer. So, tough Friday. Here is a missive from the new owner of the Commanders. We haven't heard from him, obviously, a lot. He just succeeded Daniel Snyder a couple months ago. "I feel exactly how our fans feel today, disappointed and frustrated. It's how our players and staff feel as well. I knew our first season of ownership would include challenges along the way, and we will not shy away from hard work, nor will we be deterred by adversity. As Coach Rivera and I discussed, all of our energy for the remainder of the season will be focused on playing better, more consistent football, and developing our players while intently evaluating the areas in which we need to improve this offseason. Our fans deserve a team that can compete with the NFL's best and win sustainably over the long term. I will not waver from that mission." Okay, so strong words there from the new owner. And it did make me think when I heard this morning, guys, that, you know, we talked about a couple weeks ago that the setting and environment in the league right now is very, very ripe for mass dismissals at the end of the year. Head coaches in danger. And what do head coaches in danger do when there's an issue? You start firing your assistants and you start reshuffling the deck. So I feel like we're seeing a lot of that the last week or so, and now Washington's doing it as well. But I just think it's a little unfair, you know, to Ken Del Rio and the defensive backs coach when you just traded away like your two most impact players on the defensive line, two of your most impactful players. And what did you expect in this setting, honestly? I guess you could be more competitive, but still.
I think it's warranted only because this defense has been, and it's Ron Rivera's defense. So it's a weird move because, like, Ron Rivera is almost certainly going to get fired at the end of the year. It's almost a move that signals to me, look, we want Ron Rivera to land this thing, but we want to show our fans we want to do something now, and we're not going to fire Rivera till the end of the season, or maybe week 18, whatever it is. But this is a really poorly coached defense. I thought Del Rio was an uninspired hire to begin with. He lasted a while, and no team has more like coverage busts over the last 4 years than Del Rio. They're either really awesome, like, or they're terrible, and there's nothing in between. There was a scout for the that works, I think, for Cowboys.com, Brian Brodus, who pointed out on the Cooks touchdown, they've run that route a lot all season. But the only team that, like, fell for it like a banana in the tailpipe and played it so poorly all year was Washington, and they had a walk-in touchdown.
Yeah, they were 32nd in DVOA. It's weird because under Del Rio, they were 7th last year, 27th the year before that, and 4th. So they've been all over the map. I'm with you, Dan, in the sense that I just think it was more of a statement move or like what you just read. It's like a signal to the fans. Like, we're not just sitting pat. We see what you see. We're as frustrated as you are. I just, part of me wonders that maybe Ron Rivera is allowed to land the plane, as you said, Greg. But I do wonder if maybe this would be an opportunity, if you want to go interim, to see what Eric Bieniemy could do for a stretch of time here.
I think this really signaled we're not going to do that. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, today would have been the day to do it. I could
guess
be
the
wrong.
Problem there, then he'll get swept out too, potentially. It's like, it's another,
Bieniemy,
I thought he's done a good
passed
job.
Over.
Yep.
Right.
By the way, let's give it up. Mike McCarthy. Come on now. He's got this team humming.
He does.
Remember when Kellen Moore left in the offseason? Everybody with their little jabs like, oh, he's going to run the offense? How imaginative. Texas Coast offense is humming. Okay.
I mean, you're right. And I like, by the way, they've set up a really nice stretch run. Now, they'll be heavy favorites over the Seahawks, but that's still an interesting game. And then Eagles, Bills, Dolphins, Lions. Really fun stretch run. We got a lot of, actually, I looked at all these contenders' schedules. There's a lot of good regular season games left. The schedule makers did nice. Nice job.
Nicely done, Greg. And finally, I thought the best part of this middle game, because it wasn't overly competitive, as you could see, was Tony Romo just, you know, basically losing control of his emotions when talking about Dolly Parton's halftime performance while wearing a Cowboys cheerleader uniform. She's like 80 years old. It's very impressive, Dolly, and she's a national treasure, and we love her. But nobody loves her more like Tony Romo. Please watch this or listen, and you could hear Jim Nantz getting increasingly concerned as Tony can't move off the idea of Dolly Parton in a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader's uniform.
Field is all set after the Dolly performance. We are the champions. And
she was wearing the Cowboys cheerleading outfit. Yeah. You saw that coming, didn't you? I think she's going to go with a little cheerleading outfit tonight. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good.
What do you think we're going to see?
I mean, she looks amazing, right?
You never know what's going to happen here.
Who doesn't like Dolly Parton?
No, she's absolutely an American treasure. That's for sure. And you are too, fast becoming. As you look at the quarterback comparison...
I've got like another take on Dolly that might even top this from our old friend on the show, Mary Kay Cabot. She's actually over indexed mentions. Here was a tweet from Mary Kay Cabot yesterday on Dolly. Yeah. Sitting on the couch watching some football like a big stuffed turkey, and then Dolly happened. Hopped on the treadmill, booked a consultation for implants, and reassessed my life's goal. LF, let's F and go. Mary Kay Cabot. Feeling no pain on Thanksgiving. I love it.
Feeling good. Feeling real good.
That is unlike any other Mary Kay Cabot tweet ever.
It's amazing.
The kind of the glow in Romo's face is really what takes it to the next level. Like, he's not ready to get back to being an analyst at that point.
Nance tried so hard to get out of that.
Man's desperately trying to pivot. But you know what? Like, everybody's got to stop clutching their pearls. And you know what? Tony's right. That was incredible. And Dolly Parton, you know, if you want to do some, and I didn't really know Dolly that well, other than how everyone else knows her. But she is, my wife loves Dolly Parton. And she is an incredible kind of humanitarian, and the amount of charity she does. In addition to being obviously a very talented actress and singer and all that. See, now I'm Romoing out to her.
No, I think it's appropriate. You've done a nice job, and we didn't try to sidetrack you off of that.
All right. Let's take a break. Just, you know, talk a little more Dolly off mic, and then when we come back, we'll hit the primetime game.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com, Symbiotica.com.
All right, we are back. Mark Sessler in the V-neck.
There is one other Cowboys note. I don't know about you guys, but this is more of like a parabolic mic item, I think. Depending on, you know, game to game. It's an island game in the middle of the day. Dak Prescott's pre-snap cadence. Can we just play this, Producer Eric, please?
Producer Eric.
Yeah, here we go!
Did you not hear this?
Host, like, Mark.
I want it
one more time.
Yeah, here we go!
It was like 347 times this play during the game yesterday.
Yeah,
and it just
here
seemed
we
to
go.
Get... louder and louder, and it's like, I don't know, is it a tell as a pre-snap cadence? I love how he says it. It doesn't sound like a human almost.
Well, it's his green 18, you know, it's his thing, and he's been going hard at it now for month plus, I would say. Yeah, here we go. To the point where I'm just saying that sometimes just in my everyday life, just here we go, and I think it's a nice way to just set off a conversation.
It's like when, Creed rips into My Sacrifice in the encore, and then half the audience does this.
Yeah, here we go.
I feel like some of these quarterbacks, like they know what we're going to talk about it, and like, do they lean in from an inflection or vocal point on some level to make it a little even more absurd than it needs to be? I think we all know what he's trying to say.
Well, I got to tell you this, Mark. I haven't released my top five cadence rankings for the season. It's an annual event people really look forward to. But between his voice, how strong his pipes are, and the unique nature of, here we go. I mean, he's a strong favorite for number one this year.
That's good to
hear. Yeah, here we go.
I'm going to go with you with MVP talk. It's too early to talk about the cadence rankings yet. You're not allowed to.
I'm not. It's not too early anymore. My point now is that whatever's happened to this point almost doesn't matter. It's still gonna be moving forward. Dak started it yesterday. That was a nice one because everyone's watching that game. It's like the most watched game of the year,
as opposed to the other Cowboys games that nobody was watching.
Right. Nobody watched any of those. Speaking of which, as good as Sham God did with that call, we were talking Nance and Romo. What a job by Jim Nance on the Deron Bland call there. I loved seeing Nance getting excited in a big spot. Let's hear it.
Second and 10. There it is. This is history. If Bland can take it the distance, this will be the record. Bland, for the fifth time, has a pick six. It's never happened in the history of the NFL.
And what a call by you. You got me with goosebumps, Nance. That was unbelievable.
Excellent. You're right. Excellent call by Nance, who's a Hall of Fame broadcaster. And it's also a very Romo move to his first analysis is on the call by Jim Nance.
I wish he didn't do that.
No, he didn't need to do that. But he can't. I think that's part of the give and take with Romo. He's his exuberance. He just He just says what's on his mind, like the Dolly Parton situation from minutes ago. All right, let's get to the final game. This one was also a one-sided affair.
First and goal, 8 yard line, left, toss to McCaffrey, coming left, stacked up, stays patient, squirts through, and takes it all the way down to the goal line. Touchdown! CMC, what a run that was!
CMC, TCB, a slow fuse on that one, because there was nowhere to go. And McCaffrey taking care of business.
Man, they love the acronyms over there. Greg Papa and Tim Ryan with the call. Awesome. Awesome performance by Christian McCaffrey, who, if now Greg has deigned that we're allowed to talk about the MVP race, man, where is he in the conversation? Mm. Producer Eric, as Mark referred to you earlier. I call you human, Eric.
You're just Eric's good.
Can you see, or Eric, can you see, bud, where Christian McCaffrey is in the Vegas MVP odds? Because he deserves to be there. He ran for a buck 14 and 2 scores in the first half, putting the 49ers ahead, and they cruised to a 31-13 win over the fading Seattle Seahawks, who are in a lot of trouble, Greggy. The Niners did what they wanted on offense, and even the Seahawks touchdown came on a pick six. So, yeah, this was dominance on both sides.
It couldn't be one more one-sided. I think has a lot of soul-searching going on in Seattle. But let's talk about the team that matters the most here first, and that's the 49ers. And watching this game, it occurred to me, like, Kyle Shanahan's 49ers system, essentially, this offense, has now been there for 7 years. It's been in an NFL where a lot of things change. Like, this has been an awesome offense that's brilliantly constructed and play called for a while now. It's been a great run. And to me, this is the best one. And it's the best one because of Purdy, first of all, and because he elevates their offense in a way that Jimmy G and certainly any of the other backups never did. And because they're healthy, which they often aren't. Right now they are healthy, and that's when they weren't winning games a couple weeks ago. That was a big part of it. But also because these guys have been there now for a while outside of Purdy. Debo and Ayuk and Kittle and Trent Williams. And even a lot of the line's been there for a while, and it's all just coming together. And they've been so close every year, and I'm not saying they couldn't be close in another year, but man, you look at this Shanahan thing, and it just feels like, man, this is the time. Like,
this is the team. This is it.
This is the team. This is the team to do it.
Yep, I absolutely feel the same way. It is so key that they stay healthy when all five of their offensive stars have been on the field together for full games. They've been undefeated. That shouldn't change. They're so dominant. I think it really mattered last night to see that you got Debo Samuel as the core element again. He's such a change agent. But it's like we talk about the offense, as we should, but their defense is an absolute destroyer. I mean, what they did last night, at one point in the first half, the Niners had 16 first downs and the Seahawks had run 18 plays, and it never really got better for Seattle. And I mean, you know, the same way that, you know, the first game changed the way we thought about Detroit and Green Bay, I'm looking at a Seattle, you know, schedule where you got to go to Dallas, you got the Niners and then the Eagles. I don't know. It kind of feels like curtains to me, and as ebullient as Pete Carroll is at all times, I thought the look on his face at the end of that game spoke volumes. I think they're in a bit of a dark corner that will be hard to escape from.
Now, here are the MVP odds, by the way. Jalen at plus 250.
What?
This is from DraftKings. Lamar plus 350. Mahomes plus 425. Tua plus 550. Dak plus 850. CMC plus 1,600.
These are so annoying.
Come on, bro. I think he has 16 touchdowns.
Why is Jalen Hurts the favorite? Well, Dak was plus 3,000 a couple weeks ago. So if you caught on at any time, I think that's still value. And where is Tyreek Hill, who's literally my vote right now?
Greg, nobody likes Tyreek Hill. I think that factors in.
That's just positional bias against McCaffrey, though.
Yeah, I don't think that factors in. He's plus 4,000. I don't think that factors into the DraftKings odds. But I hear you. hear he's number 10 right now.
He has some rough stuff in his personal history. Let's see. Let's get back to it. So, yes, McCaffrey, I believe he's got 16 touchdowns this year. And he's dominant. Brock Purdy, statistically, not his best game. He threw that pick six I mentioned that briefly made the game somewhat interesting in the third quarter. But also kind of put a stamp on the game and put the game away with a beautiful throw to Brandon Ayuk in zone coverage. And Shanahan, after the game, made a point to really pump up Purdy in that spot. He said, you know, that is a play where we have something underneath, a little check down that could have went for 12 yards. So when he decides to put it over the middle on a line from about 30 yards out, that is a high-level throw. And I think it gets to, Mark, what we were talking about on Wednesday about, you know, Purdy and the kind of season he's having and this, like, we act like he's, you know, this little boy that was plucked out of obscurity. That's a high-level football throw. So, yeah, he might not have the arm talent of those other quarterbacks we mentioned just now, but he's got enough to make it happen when he's pulling the trigger and using his instincts for good.
Yeah, I love that you brought up that throw because I think that's an argument in favor of the fact that this quarterback has elevated the play of Brandon Ayuk, who, I mean, Brandon Ayuk was for multiple years in a row talked about this will be the year he totally breaks out and becomes a star. It has a lot to do with him, but it has a lot to do with Purdy as well. And like their connection has been essentially flawless for weeks on end. And that throw was not the kind of throw that like a mid-tier quarterback that we'd want to write off as a system guy makes. And I look at those MVP odds and it's like, where is Purdy, to be honest? It's like, I find that to be slightly absurd that he's not near, like in the top five, top six of that list, if not higher. I think it's just, we're looking at a perception problem when it comes to Brock Purdy in this offense.
Here's the thing, if they get the one seed, and I'm not ruling them out of that, like he's got a chance. It's stupid, the fact that Jalen's plus 250, because that's just like they have the one seed. And I just love the way they started this game. I think of NBA teams, you talk about two-man games a lot, just like the two stars kind of playing off each other. You know, Porzingis and Jaylen Brown right now, beautiful two-man game. They got a two-man game going with Debo and CMC, and where they're just using them interchangeably and matching them up, and they have the Seahawks defense had no freaking clue what to do the first couple drives of that game. Shanahan just owns this matchup. He owns Pete Carroll, who's a defensive coach when the 49ers have the ball, and the way they use those two guys is pretty beautiful.
It's funny, and that's obviously credit to Kyle Shanahan, the offensive mastermind. I like this thing that's going on this year. I feel like there's been an uptick in it this year of just like shots to Mike Shanahan, Kyle's father, sitting stone-faced in the stands with that shock of white hair. And a lot of like younger fans don't even know that Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan is who he is in large part because of Mike Shanahan, who was a genius in his own right and won multiple Super Bowls. And now Kyle has kind of taken the league over and is that dude. Seattle, you're right, had no answers. It looked like Reek Woolen got benched in this game, although Carroll downplayed it afterwards.
I mean, he was benched.
He missed tackles. Carroll said after the game that he had a bad shoulder, but he was playing special teams after they took him out of the game for Michael Jackson. So, I mean, you talk about Reek Woolen was one of the best young additions to the league last year. Now he's on the bench on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, Geno Smith is dealing with the arm injury, but this offense just is not humming anymore, Greg. And if Geno is not physically right, and we'll have to see, he played that game with a big kind of like knot on his throwing elbow. Maybe it is that time to have a Drew Lock conversation, but at the same time, like nobody was like pumping the brakes on the Drew Lock experience harder than me a couple of years back in Denver. It's not necessarily a great second option, but the offense has hit a rut. There's no doubt about it.
They're disappointing. Like everything about this team is disappointing. They're 6-5. And what you said about the Packers and the Vikings can get in is in large part because the Seahawks can fall right out of this thing. I mean, think about these two games against the Ravens where this game and the Ravens game were absolutely Geno didn't excel, but and he's not going to be able to elevate things going really wrong around him. But find a spot in this team that's not getting blasted. They spent their whole offseason building up this defensive line, completely changing it, spending tons of money, draft picks. They got young guys coming up, Draymond Jones. They trade for Leonard Williams. They get blown off the ball. They can't tackle anyone. CMC, their defensive rookie of the year, Tariq Woolen's getting benched. Their linebackers are slow. DK Metcalf is having one of the worst seasons for a quote-unquote superstar wide receiver. The guy can't make a catch.
I'm pulling him out of the club, I think, Greggy. I had him in the club. I think so.
He's killing my guy, Gino. Gino's not great, but two drops that kill drives, and then when it's 14-3 and you're trying to change the game, and that could have been a touchdown or at least a 50-yard play down the field, and DK just drifts and drifts. And trust me, Seahawks fans have been losing their mind over DK's play in this game. And then their O-line stunk in this game. Most of those sacks were quick sacks. So it's like, I just don't see what they're good at. Maybe they're average enough to win nine games again, but man, it's pretty disappointing. It's very disappointing.
This is also one matchup that they cannot solve. And I think like last year on Thursday night, like Charvarius Ward versus DK Metcalf was physical and it went both ways. Like last night, he was just taken out of the game, DK Metcalf. And then you got nowhere to go.
I'll give the final word to Christian McCaffrey, who deserves to be way better than plus 6,000, because he has been
1,600, buddy. By the way, 1,600. Just for accuracy. Six.
Thank you.
And that's Purdy's important. Plus 3,000, number eight. So he's sort of in the mix, but not really.
Ridiculous.
One of the things I like about the write-ups by the AP and others on Thanksgiving is like just like a lot of turkey talk. Just like turkey talk slips in there. And I want to hear this quote from McCaffrey because I'm reading it and I'm like, man, this guy is really going into detail about this turkey. And it's like slotted in between two like beefy graphs about the, you know, other just like statistics about this win. And then you have, all right, here's, I'm going to drop in the CMC quote here. And the guy's just going on and on about the turkey.
That was awesome. It was actually really good turkey too. I have no idea how they kept all of the dishes were hot. I was bummed I didn't get the sweet potato with the marshmallows. That I don't know if they had they had a fork, but then they, you know, we had to pick the turkey leg up. By that time I was eating the turkey. But the turkey was really good, well cooked, wasn't dry at all, and like I said, still hot, which was impressive for being, you know, 20 minutes after the game. I don't know where they kept it, but it was good turkey.
Somebody give CMC an update how they kept the turkey warm. What did they use? Was it an oven kept on low? Was it just covered and kept maybe in a microwave with the microwave off? Like, how did they keep it? Was there one of those burners underneath, but they were very careful not to have the burner turned up too high? You know what I'm talking about? Those things? I don't know.
They gotta have an oven. They gotta have a kitchen somewhere in the bowels of that stadium. But I was thinking as we're listening to that, like, man, I've rarely heard CMC talk at length, and maybe that's why he just gets super nerdy about turkeys. And
he was spinning out there.
That actually was a quote from July. I mean, the guy, it's all he talks about.
I gotta say, I watched this game with you know, friends and their families, and a lot of kids were there, and no moment all day popped to them like George Kittle throwing that turkey leg up into the crowd and running with turkeys afterwards. That was huge in the 10-year-old set. They were talking about, they wanted to throw some turkeys. It was just like that popped. So that was a nice moment for Kittle to really break
through. By that moment in my house, and I still have a family here that stayed the night, the Princess Bride had been turned on by that point.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
You skipped that.
We had a late
day. As you wish. Anything else?
No.
All right, I'm going to go play football with some kids now.
Really?
Yeah.
Dan, I
will.
I hope you will dominate them. Like, that sounds like a good spot for you to really shine athletically.
Yesterday, we played also, and it was tough because I had to be we used to call it automatic QB. But I think my son corrected me and say now that they call it all QB or something. But anyway, we had an uneven number, so I played QB, and it was tough when you automatic QB on both sides, because it's like Barry Sanders in that flag football game. Like, I'm trying to distribute to all these kids and there's so many mouths to feed and nobody's happy at the end of the game. You can't win as automatic QB. Because everyone thinks they should have been targeted more. And here I am. I've completed probably about 60 or 70% of my passes, and half the kids can't even catch. So that's a pretty high percentage. And after the game, I'm being told that I was leaving people out of the game plan. Wow. So we got another game about to play. Now we have even number because some people went home. And I'm going to be playing defense. And I'm going to be very physical. And I'm going to send messages to those who complained about my quarterback play, specifically my eldest son Jack, who thought that I cost him the game yesterday by not throwing it to him literally every time. So there's a don't lot get mad, get here. Even. I'm gonna be hitting like our friend Kareem. Who is it? Kareem Jackson.
Yeah.
I'm hitting like Jackson in this game.
Okay.
I wish I was there. I not to sound like Sessler when he plays tennis with his family, but we played a little football too yesterday, and I almost thought I was dominating the game so much that I had to back off and not be as show offy with what was going on. Like you said, distribute it around, but the explosiveness was absolutely there, and I was very proud of my son though to finish the game. Had a key Charvarius Ward like pass breakup on me, so in a big spot, I ultimately didn't come through for the team, and he knocked that thing out of my hands like Charvarius Ward.
I mean, we've played with Walker in the past, and you've seen that those innate DB skills. So I'm not surprised to hear that update.
I like to keep my sons in games where I'm involved, but very rarely do they get the W, and that's the way I was raised as well. My dad in one-on-one basketball took me into I was like a sophomore in high school to finally beat him. He did this back down move in the post where he would back me down and then he'd use his left arm as a clear out and do a little jump hook. And it was total BS. And I would tell him that. I actually told him that last week because we were reminiscing about it. And when I finally beat him, it was all the more rewarding. And it was a changing of the guard athletically within the family dynamic. And that's what I want the boys to do to me.
You know, right. He still talks about that.
So when they beat me, they'll beat me. And that will be a moment. Or they'll never beat me, perhaps, as well. I'm like Barry Sanders' monster of a dad.
No, that's good dad work. On a tennis court, I keep the foot on the gas, though. I'll tell you that much.
I know you do, buddy. Never forget that Barry Sanders' dad, on the day that Barry ran for 2,000 yards in 1997, when the first thing... when he went to the Hall of Fame, Barry Sanders' dad, for Sanders' induction and gave the speech, the first thing he said was that Jim Brown was the greatest running back of all time. And then he said that his son was the third greatest running back of all time. And everybody was like, what did he mean? Who's the second? He called himself the second greatest running back of all time. Imagine. Now that's taking it to an extreme.
Yes.
I did not know
his dad was a handyman.
Right. And he literally did not play professional football.
Anyway, be nice to your kids. Because one day they'll have to take care of you. All right. Happy Thanksgiving weekend, everybody. Enjoy it. We'll be back on Sunday with the full recap of both the Black Friday Jets-Dolphins affair. Can't wait. And everything on Sunday. Until then, you know what you gotta do. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.